Greetings, this is Nigeria, and you're on UrbanBuzzMag.com, and I have Ella Joyce on the line with me. Ella, say hello to the people.
Hello, people. How you doing? Glad to be talking to you today.
Man, Ella, you have such a plethora of roles. Is there any role that you've played that you enjoyed the most?
You know, it's hard to think off the top of my head because I really enjoy everything I do.
That's good.
You know, every role I get into, I try to embrace it and just enjoy it, even if I'm not fond of the movie.
Wow.
You know, I
okay.
try to embrace the role. Now, I had a ball playing Detective Waller in Set It Off. That kind of nipped at my appetite to do action movies.
Right.
And at that time, they really weren't looking at us too much for action films.
Mm-hmm,
so I was sort of on the forefront of that as a black woman in that type of a role.
Right.
And I didn't get too many more roles for detectives after that.
Yeah.
But I do get a lot of roles to play mothers. People see me like that.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy playing the mother in Tyler Perry's Temptation, Confessions of a Marriage Counselor.
Girl, you did that.
I really enjoyed. That was my second time playing Journey Smollett's mom.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I played her mom in Selma, Lord Selma,
mm-hmm.
when she was 12 years old.
Wow.
And that was Disney's Selma, Lord Selma. It was a really great time, a good film. One of my best friends was in it, Yolanda King, who has left us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she passed, God mm-hmm. rest her soul. But her and I were very good friends, and we just enjoyed the fact that we both were in that movie
right.
about the famous march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. So I enjoyed that. And then years later, I think it's almost like, what, maybe almost, I hate to say 10, but, you know, time do be moving.
Right.
And then I'm playing her mother, and she's a grown woman.
You know,
and I'm still playing her mother again. And I just think that's wonderful, you know, when things happen like that.
And you played along some of the who's who in Hollywood, the up and coming in Hollywood. Is there any other person that you became close friends with?
Oh, yeah. You know, let's see. Well, you know, Rocky Carroll still kind of considers me his sis.
Right.
He still calls me sis.
Love it.
Yeah, I just love him. And Keith David,
okay.
you know, I've done several independent films with him. Just everybody I work with, I just enjoy myself, you know. I love meeting new people on a set. Something people wouldn't know, I mean, almost like 150 years ago, when I was starting out as an actress, doing theater in New York, off-Broadway. Wait, no, matter of fact, off-Broadway. And we were at a theater called the Sam Beckett Theater. And Morgan Freeman, it was when I first met him, he was starring in this play called Medea and the Doll. It was a two-character piece.
Mm-hmm.
I was like the understudy, you know, costume girl,
right.
Running the lights, running the sound. You know?
I love it.
I was doing everything I could do to sort of earn my bones in theater. And I really enjoyed working with Morgan then because he wasn't a big star yet.
Right.
You know, he's just cool people.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then as I saw him, you know, his career growing and growing and growing, I remember I ran into him on New York subway one day.
Wow.
And at first, you know, nobody recognized him, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he hadn't done all the big, big roles that he ended up doing. I think up until that point, he may have only done Driving Miss Daisy at that point,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
He was standing on the subway with his cowboy hat and his cowboy boots on, and nobody really recognized him, but I knew who he was.
Right.
I said, Morgan! He said, hey, baby, how you doing? I said, I'm still out here knocking on these doors.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you keep doing that, baby.
Amen.
They got to open up soon. Keep knocking on them doors. Kept his advice at the front of my heart. When you get frustrated and you're just thinking it's not doing anything, you're not going where you envisioned yourself going, I always remember him saying, keep knocking on them doors, baby, because they got to open up eventually.
How many years have you been in the industry?
Oh, I've been in it a long time. You know, by the time I did rock, which was in the 90s, you mm-hmm. know, it came on the air, I think, in 1991.
Uh-huh.
And it went off the air in 94. But up until then, I had even been doing plays,
mm-hmm.
theater, you know, going maybe regional theater around the country. I had done little industrial film projects.
Right.
You know, anything I could get my hands on, you know, people's student films. You know, I had been out there for quite a while. Matter of fact, even before I got rock, I had won a theater award at the Adelcos.
Okay.
So I had been out there for a minute, but things really picked up for me after, of course, I got rock.
Okay.
Because that put me out there in a different way.
Right.
And it made people be like, oh, here's somebody else that's been out here, mm-hmm. you know, interpreting roles for us.
Right.
And after I got rock, you know, I was able to get a little bit more of the movies and the film industry and do plays.
Right.
I never stopped doing plays. I love theater. So I recently, a few years ago, you know, I'll step away from the film to concentrate on theater for a minute. I did Have an I Say at the Goodman Theater in Chicago
mm-hmm.
with Marie Foster Thomas. It's a two-character piece about the famous Delaney sisters.
Oh, nice.
Who, like, were the first black women to become doctors, to become a teacher with the New York State certification. And they take your history back 100 years. We got wonderful standing ovations. I also recently did King Headley by August Wilson. It was my second time doing it. And I played the character of Rose, and I ended up with the Los Angeles Ovation Award.
Nice.
For the role of Rose. So I always step away to go do theater. I love theater. And then I go back to doing a film, somebody else, especially independent films, because they always offer you really great roles.
Nice.
In an independent film, as opposed to the big features, you know, you got to just hope that they let you have a walk on, you know, because those are usually for the big, big, big stars, you know.
They need to stop that.
But I know. Well, this industry need a whole lot of changes.
Well, it's going to change now.
After this pandemic,
yep.
It will.
Yep.
The way that black women have been excluded in this industry or even portrayed, you know, there's just not enough work going around. I mean, a lot of it has improved over the years, but it still has a long way to go. I mean, here we are in 2020, and there is only one African-American family show on any of the major networks. There's something very wrong with that.
Right.
Very wrong.
Right.
You know, ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox are the four major networks that pay a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you can only name one African-American show.
Right.
That doesn't make sense. You know, there's some sort of Jim Crow laws of Hollywood that says, okay, we got our one show for black people, and that's the only one we're going to focus on.
Right, right.
You know, that cuts work out for everybody, and not just work in front of the camera. It cuts out work behind the camera.
Right.
You know, they're not breaking their neck to bring on our writers and directors and designers and our great people who work in the crew and our wonderful actors. You know, one show is like a tokenism.
Right.
And it does not represent us. Well, there's nothing wrong with the show. We're glad at least we got it. But, I mean, why is it only one when in the 90s, you know, we had several black family shows on several different networks.
Right.
At least everyone tried to have at least one.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've only got, out of all the networks, we've only got one black family show.
Amazing.
In a major way. You know, when we had all those other shows, like My Wife and Kids, I did 6 episodes of that. That was a great show that was on the air, and
mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the 6 episodes that I did with them. I loved working with Damon and Tisha and everybody on the show. One of the young ladies ended up playing my daughter in another movie I did after she had kind of grown up.
Wow.
So, you know, we all kind of like family.
Right.
You know, we see each other again as we're growing up. I mean, little Raven Kelly Larrimore, You know, she came on Rock when she was just a little baby girl.
Mm-hmm.
She was like 9 years old. She came on there with Victoria Dillard playing her mother. And it was an episode about AIDS, and everybody was, you know, just learning about AIDS the way everybody just learning about coronavirus. Well, AIDS was the big thing then that everybody was tripping on and was scared of. And so we had that one episode where she came on. She was just so wonderful. You know, she's a wonderful, wonderful little actress. And now she's grown up, and she played my daughter, the movie, Preacher's Kid. She played my daughter in there as a grown woman.
Man.
So it's wonderful how we all are like family and we see each other again on other projects, you know.
Yes. And you played in Nina, too. Nina, the movie about Nina Simone. What was that like?
Nina, yeah. That was the name of the movie, Nina. Well, I enjoyed working on it. Of course, I, you know, was hurt by all of the controversy that came out behind it. I just felt that there was a lot of narrow-mindedness going on. I understand how hurt we black people are, you know, about complexion, you know, and I understand it completely. My mother is dark-skinned, so can't nobody say nothing step to me about that at all.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I've always been extremely protective of my mother and my grandmother.
Uh-huh.
My grandmother was darker than her, and my great-grandmother was what they used to call blue black, midnight black. So these are the women in my family.
Right.
And they happened to marry, you know, light-skinned men.
Right.
But they were brothers, too.
Right.
You know, black men.
Right.
And so when people start tripping, you know, I'd be like, well, look, you know, we want to be actresses, right? Just like the white actresses who can play anything they want, whenever they want, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the white actors can do that. They can transform themselves.
Even to a black
role. We get real, real offended and real focused on things not being played the way it should be where complexion is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understood, you know, how people were upset. But I wished at some point a lot of people, and some did, could look past that and look at the wonderful work that Zoe did. Because
excellent.
She loved Nina too.
Right.
She loved her music.
Right.
That was the reason why Nina was in her heart. She was in all of our hearts.
Right.
That was the reason she wanted to play her, you know, and she wanted to transform herself and get into the role. I enjoyed working on the film. I enjoyed working with Cynthia Moore. You know, she was very courageous and brave to do that. And she's from Detroit as well.
Mm-hmm.
She was a white director. She loved Nina.
Right.
She loved Nina's music. Most people out of Detroit, you know, they really have great taste in music in Detroit. You know, Detroit, you know, exemplary taste in music.
Okay.
Some of the best music in the world come out of Detroit, baby. But, you know, she loved Nina's music. She grew up in the Detroit area. And that's why, you know, the movie was in her heart to do. You know, she wanted to show some other aspects of Nina that maybe people would not have seen. Now, they did go after, you know, some darker complected actresses who are in the business, and it was a couple of them turned it down.
Oh, okay.
You know, maybe
let
they
it be
didn't
known.
Like the script or whatever. So when people start saying, oh, so-and-so, she played this role, show them, you don't even know if they've been asked or not.
Right.
And maybe they turned it down for whatever reason. Maybe it wasn't enough money. Maybe they didn't like the script. Maybe they didn't want to work with that director. Maybe they didn't want to work with the people. You never know what their reasoning is. So people can't just assume that you can just go to this actress that you think is the actress right now who should play that role. You don't even realize that they may have been asked and they said no. Now, the reason that movie got done was because Zoe got behind it as a producer.
Wow.
And had they not killed it the way they did, my own belief is that Nina's music would be getting a second life right now.
Nice.
People would be playing it everywhere and listening to her music. There's a big difference from a movie and a documentary. Right. The documentary on Nina was wonderful, mm-hmm. absolutely wonderful. But a movie goes more into the drama. People sort of take, you know, creative license with a character or a storyline that they're trying to bring across. And they use their imagination a lot more in a movie. So that's why we can't look at movies as being the exact historical thing. You have to look at the documentary.
Right.
The documentary gives you facts. A movie gives you people's imagination, you know, and that's why we look at those. So, well, what have happened, I think, is that people would have now been listening to her music, sort of the way they did with Lady Sings the Blues.
Yes.
You know, when Diana Ross played Billie Holiday, I mean, they're not the same complexion at all. If you look at the real pictures of Billie Holiday, they didn't look alike. They didn't sound alike. But Diana Ross did a bang-up job.
She sure enough did.
That role.
Yep.
You know, she slapped the hell out that role. And the music, you started listening to
again. That's right.
You know, and then you didn't just listen to Billy. You listened to Diana Ross's version of Billy. So she wasn't trying to sing just like Billy. She did her thing.
Right.
With her voice. And she was wonderful. And that doesn't take anything away from Billie. It enhanced her. So now people want to listen to the real Billie Holiday recording. And that's how her music got popular again.
Right.
And if you don't understand how important movies about our famous icons and artists are, if you really don't understand that, then you got to look at certain people now. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't know Nancy Wilson's work. Why?
Come
because there was never
Ella.
A movie.
You preaching,
there
Ella.
There was never a movie made of her. And she just left us.
Right.
You know, people should have been screaming praises about Nancy Wilson the whole time Billie Holiday was alive.
Mm.
They were alive and making hit records at the same time. People don't know Dinah Washington. Because there's no movie about her. So what would have happened with Nina had there not just been such energy to kill it? People would have been listening to her music again.
Right.
You know, I just love her version of Here Comes the Sun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I put a spell on you.
Yeah.
You know, her music is just phenomenal. There's never going to be another Nina
Simone.
That's
right. That's right.
You know,
all
we can do is just try to play her life and put her energy into our hearts. But I enjoyed working on the movie. I just didn't enjoy all the controversy about it.
In 2020, Ella Joyce, you have a new show, Casting the Net.
Yes. On a new network, new Black-owned network.
Tell us about it.
Called UrbanFlixTV.com.
All right.
And it is owned by an African-American man, and we are one of the premier shows on this brand new launched network. And we need our people to support it.
Right.
You know, to just, I mean, we got a network now, and their slogan is movies for all of us, not just some of us.
Nice.
So it's inclusive.
Right.
It's not just all Black, although it's predominantly, of course, with Black people in the leads. The movies and the TV shows that they do include whites and Blacks and Latins and Asians and transgenders and gays. We're including everybody.
Good.
You know, in lead roles that you may not necessarily see. I mean, like Casting the Net has three women of color in the lead role.
Nice.
You know, I'm added to it. I play a casting director.
Right.
But the show itself is based around the three lead women. And they're beautiful. All three of them are gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
The men that look at the show, they just love it. You know, they're all different complexions, different looks as we are as Black people.
That's
we got
right.
all these different looks. I just love it. And I loved working on this piece because it was supported by really heavy people in the industry. Everybody in the industry the good people just want to work. That's all.
I love
We're not necessarily led by money all the time.
Right.
You know, a lot of times you take projects because you believe in them. And if you have to take a little pay cut or maybe things aren't going to be quite the way you're used to it, mm-hmm. you make the adjustment because of the project.
Right.
And that's what all of these professionals did. Our crew was top notch. I mean, and it was totally integrated,
mm-hmm.
not just a couple of blacks here and a whole bunch of whites, or a black production and you got one or two whites over there.
Mm-hmm.
It was evenly assigned. I mean, we really had a good crew, and that is why our show looks so good. It looks like anything that belongs on CBS. And then the talent that's in it, and these are all people who are professionals in front of the camera and back of the camera who just want it to work. And that's how we ended up with these great people. I mean, Phaedra Harris, Andrew P. Jones, both wrote the script together.
Okay.
Phaedra Harris is a casting director here in Los Angeles. And I, you know, patterned my character after her.
Oh, okay.
She's
okay.
a friend of mine, too. So
okay.
I was really, really flattered when she asked me to play the role, to play her. You know, it
nice.
Was fun. It's as good as anything you'll see on the major networks like HBO.
So tell us about the whole Casting the Net show. It's about a casting director. So now, your experience, how can an actor or an actress prepare to go into the casting room?
You mean in real life?
Yeah, in real life.
Well, in real life, you know, you get the script, you get what they call sides, which is a couple of pages from the script that they're, the scene that they're going to have you audition with. Your agent will send that to you. And then you work on it. They bring you into the room. There's a camera set up. There's a camera person set up running it. The casting director is the person that is going through all the pictures and resumes and the professionals that they know in their career help cast this movie or TV show for the director. Now, the director has the final say-so. So the casting director, all they do is gather the people and bring them in to the director, and then they come in and read, and then the director can make up their mind later, oh, I want this one, or I want to see that one again, let's do some callbacks.
Okay.
And the callbacks is after they've rendered everybody down to the few people that they're, you know, sort of making up their mind about, and then they'll bring them back, and then they'll have a callback, and they'll audition a second time. Some instances, it may be a third time. They'll render it down even more, maybe between two people. But every time you come into that room, you know, the camera's set up, they put you on tape, and the people who are responsible for hiring you may be in that room. A lot of them wait to come to the final callback.
Okay.
They're not so much involved in the beginning decision. That usually kind of gets left up to the casting director.
Okay.
Because the casting director kind of goes through everybody and they see, like the guy, I shouldn't give it away, but there's one scene where he comes in and he wants to be a method actor so bad. You know, there's a scene where he got to pull out a gun and this boy comes in with a real gun.
Oh, yeah.
You
we
know,
see it in the
and
promo.
And it upsets everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you make, like, you know, stupid decisions like that,
mm-hmm.
the word gets around the industry and people be like, no, nah, don't bring him in no more. Because he's a little bit too crazy, okay?
Amazing.
So then he goes and takes some acting lessons.
I love it.
That's really what it is, you know. And then the three ladies in the lead, they are getting so frustrated with the way African-American women are being treated in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get nowhere. You got all this talent and nobody wants to give you a chance. So the ladies creating their own movie to get some buzz going in Hollywood, and it sort of does something nobody expects. The movie gets around all of Hollywood. The casting director got big names calling her.
Nice.
And they end up getting people attached, you know, and that's how things happen in Hollywood. You know, the buzz
right.
goes around and then everybody wants to be attached.
Wow.
So now you got a writer wanting to be attached.
Mm-hmm.
You got big stars wanting to be attached.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up getting this scriptwriter who's gotten all kind of awards, but he's older, and so he's mistreated in Hollywood because of ageism. Oh, they just treat older people like they need to go sit down, and that's not the case.
Right.
You know, the wisdom of older people that wrote you all these great scripts, and there are many little scenes throughout it that the audience is not expecting. So at the end of the sixth episode, everybody is saying, well, hell, I want a second season. You can't end it like that.
Right. And that's
so we
excellent.
Need all of our people out there to subscribe to this network. We can get that second season going. We need everybody subscribing to Urban Flicks TV.
That's right. That's right. I'm glad you said that. It is important for us to subscribe to it because we complain about we don't have these roles in Hollywood. And then a network comes along trying to open up a door and we still on Netflix. Mm. But, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Oh, no, I'm the truth.
Thank you.
I'm the truth. You know.
That's the truth right there. And when we see things like this, we have to support it. We really do because those other big networks and everything, they ain't supporting us.
And the bottom line, Ella, is that they have the advertising dollars to do what they do. As opposed to,
as soon as
you say urban, the advertisers are like, okay, we got cigarettes and alcohol. We can offer y'all some sneakers and
we know how
some fried chicken.
They're limited.
Right. So we don't have the $50 million.
And I think what this show is trying to do is break all the stereotypes.
Yes.
You know, that Hollywood has created. Mm. And there are other shows at the network as well. You know, we're not the only one. There are other shows and they keep adding them as they go. We've got to remember, they just launched the network in May.
Oh, okay. Okay.
May 1st was the launch date.
Nice.
And that was right during our pandemic.
Right.
So we were really blessed to have something in the can that they were able to go ahead and launch May 1st while we were right in the middle of a shelter at home. And May 1st was the ticket, baby. It was the ticket.
Yes.
Was everybody looking for something new to binge watch?
Yeah.
We got six episodes.
Good.
So everybody looking for something new. They done looked at everything that you can binge watch. And then when our show came out May 1st, people were digging it.
Good.
They were digging it, and they all are begging for a second season.
Excellent.
So as soon as all of this dies down, we can go back in front of the cameras. I know the writers and the directors, they're already working on the new episode.
Right.
So all we need is for this coronavirus to come under control, where people can start really working again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's going to be a new world. People are going to have to work differently than they did before. Going to stop what we do because we're artists.
Mm.
That's why I've been doing my, I do Funkicize, which I trademarked, which is a dance fitness exercise that I do once a week. And it's based on all of the music from the 60s and 70s. And the dances out of the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing it for 7 years.
Wow.
People in, you know, who are of that generation,
uh-huh.
they come to my class and we play all those jams.
Nice.
From the 60s, 70s, and the 80s. And we be dancing and getting our exercise on. People miss, you know, dancing that way, doing the monkey and the mashed potatoes and the boogaloo and people didn't realize, you know, you can exercise off of that.
That's right.
And so what I do every week is I hold this class for about an hour at the dance studio. And I have a lot of people that come. Well, once the pandemic started, and I was like, Lord, what am I going to do to stay in shape? Because that's my thing to stay in shape, my hobby. I put on a good old record every morning. I get up and dance.
Right.
That's how I stay in shape. And the music makes you feel good. The music that came out of the 60s and 70s. All make you feel good. It makes you want to party. Makes you want to love people. And so that's what I do. So what happened was I have another director, friend of mine, producer in the business, who is also very good at what she does. She's out of Detroit. You know, I'm real close with Detroit folk. And she lives, you know, like right in my neighborhood. She had just moved into a brand new, pristine home right when the pandemic started. So we decided to turn her living room into a studio.
Okay.
Because nobody else had lived there
right.
before her. It was brand new. And she had only been in it 2 weeks. And she offered me, she said, Elle, I love her because she's a funkicizer. You know, she was there from the beginning when I was doing it.
Okay.
And she said, you know what? We can use this studio once a week. And if you want to come in here and do a few songs for the people, I'll show you how to do it on Facebook Live. I didn't know nothing about no Facebook Live. And I said, cool. Show me.
Right.
And so because she's so creative, she gives me a beautiful background, you know, just like we had a regular studio.
Mm-hmm.
And she gives me light. She gives me close-ups. She does everything that a wonderful director does to support an artist, you know, trying to communicate with the audience. We have been doing this every Friday since the pandemic.
Wow.
And I do it as a public service. To my fans.
Right.
You know, I don't try to charge them money or nothing like that. Plus, you know, the music, you know, I don't have the rights to none of the music. I'm just playing old jam, you know. And what happens is that a lot of those artists end up clicking in and they happy to see me doing their old songs and little dance routines I got. I was like, oh, God, I hope they don't come after me, you know.
Right.
I'm not charging anybody. I'm just doing it as a public service. For the people out there who need to exercise every week and are getting bored and shut in and unhappy. And, you know, this is affecting everybody.
Right.
And so every week on Friday at 8 o'clock, I do Facebook Live. And we do about 20 minutes, you know, because you do a bunch of 2 and 3 minute songs. That's all those records were back
right,
in the day.
Right.
2 and 3 minutes. And I end up having musicians clicking in. And they're happy. I got the brothers from the Contours. And I had Tim Kinley from the Funkadelic come in. So I did a special thing for him on Flashlight by the Parliament.
Oh, I love it.
Funkadelic.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent that video out to like 6,000 people. I've had a bunch of people click in to let me know how happy they were to see me dancing to that music and sharing it with the world. Smokey Robinson's wife clicked in, Claudette Robinson. She just loved it. And a lot of people, they click in every week to dance with me. They save the video, and then they work on it during the week. And
right.
they let me know in the comments, girl, I needed this. I put that song on, and I did the twist and shout. You know, I love the Isley Brothers, you know.
Right.
I did the twist and shout, and I did the mashed potatoes and the funky Broadway, and we love James Brown. And I just love that. It has really given me a type of escape, and it gives me the joy that any hobby is supposed to bring you, you know. And so I enjoy doing that. So that's Funkicize, and I got a website for it, funkicize.com. And you can also go to ellajoyce.com, and it's all the information is there at the website. My acting is at ellajoyce.com, so you can go and see videos or whatever I got going on, and current appearances, actress stuff.
Right.
And the funkicize.com deals with the past 7 years of all this humanity of people that have been coming to my class and dancing.
Nice.
And I've had young people and old people love it. Girl, the young people come in and they're surprised when this old girl makes them go down for a minute and catch their breath. Oh, one young girl come in. She said, wait a minute, Ella. I thought I was going to have to come in and, you know, not show you up. You done show me up, girl. I'm going to go over here and sit down for a minute.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Girl, where do you get this energy from? I said, I don't know. I was blessed with it from the Father above, baby. He just gave me this incredible energy, and it hasn't burned out of me yet.
Amen. Amen.
People be sending me comments saying, oh, girl, I needed this. I'm sitting at home, quarantined, ain't got nothing to do. I just love you do this and bring some energy to us.
Nice.
And that warms my heart. It really does.
Man, Ella, you still keeping busy and doing what you need to do, so ain't nothing stopped you now.
Yeah, we as artists, we don't just sit down and twiddle our thumbs and say, oh, what are we going to do? You know,
right.
we not working, ain't nobody hiring. We don't do that. The real artists create something.
Come on now.
And they don't wait for permission to do it. Real artist, if they paint, they gotta paint. If they sing, they gonna be singing. If they dance, they gonna be dancing.
Right.
And if they act, gonna be acting no matter what they have to do. You got people right now on Zoom reading plays and reading storybooks and whatnot. They can't just sit there and twiddle their thumbs because they communicate with audiences.
Mm.
And the audiences love it. And people are at home right now and they're looking for whatever they can for entertainment because it's running out.
Yeah.
It's just running out. You know, we haven't gone back to work. When I do that every weekend, it just reminds me as a public service, you know, you are an artist first.
Mm.
Now, if you happen to be, you know, paid well, there's nothing wrong with that. I love being paid well just like anybody else.
Right.
But that's not what I'm out here doing it for.
Right, right. And it's not going to stop your gifts.
No, baby. I'm going to be dancing till the Lord tell me to go sit down.
Yeah.
So far, he hadn't done that.
I know.
He keep giving me more and more energy. I'd be like, Lord, what's going on? I'm only doing this because you must want me to do it.
Facts. Ella, tell them about your social media and your website one more time and again.
Okay, you can go to ellajoyce.com, okay, and I got everything about Urban Flix TV right there. If you go to current appearances or my actress page, you can also go to funkasize.com, and that's spelled with a Z, Funkasize, and it's trademarked by me, and all of that's at my website. They can also go straight to urbanflixtv.com and sign up for their season. It's not that expensive, and so they can go straight to Urban Flix TV and find some good reason to go on and subscribe to it, I hope, for the year instead, because they're giving you a week trial right now, and that gives you a chance to watch all the episodes really for free.
Right.
You know, you pay, I think, like $4.99 or something, and then if you don't want to do the whole year, you don't have to, something like that.
Right.
But I think for the year, it's $49. That's not much.
That is nothing.
For the whole year.
That's right. And we need the support. And you tell Urban Flix to call Urban Buzz Magazine and let's merge and work together and do something big.
All right. They're open to anything that's going to help them get out there and get the word out there.
Well, I thank you, Ella Joyce, for stopping by. And as we say, once a key player, always a key player. That means anything else you do, even with your Funkaside or anything else, you feel free to call back and let us do another interview to let the audience know that Ella Joyce is still out there.
Dave,
I'm honored to have you as a key player. You don't know. I love you.
Thank you.
You now my...
Thank you so much.
You are now my official adopted celebrity auntie.
All right. Now, when we get that second season, you're going to be one of the first people I call in to put the word out there.
That's
why.
Soon
as they give us the word that we got that second season.
And that's what we do. You got my number. That's how we roll.
All right, girl. Well, thank you so much for reaching out to me.
No problem.
You know, I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All righty.